Welcome to the Syneos Health Podcast. I'm Jeff Stewart from Syneos Health Consulting. This is a special edition about COVID-19, the first in a short series. In this first episode, I'll be joined by Dr. Siying Zhou. Dr. Zhou is from Wuhan, China, the epicenter of what the World Health Organization declared today is a global pandemic. We'll hear the personal experience of Siying and her family, which is harrowing, as you'll hear. I might also add, Siying is a coworker. We work together on copay assistance strategies, and we've worked on many projects together, and is a close personal friend. So it's been an experience over the last now over 2 months working with her, knowing what she and her family were going through. So it means a lot to me to bring this episode to the rest of my friends and family and coworkers and those in our industry, because what they're going through in China and what Siying and her family have gone through and are going through may very well be what we're going to go through in the very near future. COVID-19 Special Edition, The Personal Experience, next on the Syneos Health Podcast. Siying, we've worked together for several years. You grew up in the epicenter of what is now the COVID-19 coronavirus outbreak in Wuhan, China. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
And you still have family back there, correct?
Yes, I have almost all my families and friends still there. I spent the first 22 years of my life in Wuhan. So it's a place that's very, very dear to my heart. It is my home.
Siying, I've never been to Wuhan. Can you describe what Wuhan is like as a city? I know it's a big city, but I don't know really what it's like. What's it like?
Yeah, sure. I can give you a little introduction about Wuhan. It is the capital and the largest city in Hubei province. It is the most populous city in central China. It has a population of over 11 million. It is nowadays considered as the political, financial, commercial, and educational center of central Wuhan. And also, it has a unique geographic location where it is the transportation hub in China. It's located by our biggest river, of Yangtze River, and it has dozens of railways, roads, expressways passing through the city. So that makes, you know, this time the outbreak happening in Wuhan an extremely difficult challenge for the government to contain, because one major challenge for them is to try to control the spread of the disease.
I know that you have a PhD, and after you left Wuhan, you came to the United States to get that PhD. Where did you go to school and what did you study?
I did my college in Wuhan, and then after that, I went to Yale University for my PhD study. My study was focused in cell biology and hematology.
When did you first hear about a respiratory virus going around in Wuhan? I know that this isn't the first respiratory virus. There was also SARS before. When did you first hear, maybe before I heard, or the rest of us heard?
I can share a little bit of story there. I first heard about the virus back in mid-December 2019 from some anecdotal reportings on a Chinese social media platform. It didn't really raise any alarm in myself, as there was no official news about it. And then about 2 weeks later, the government confirmed that they're treating a dozen of new cases with pneumonia of unknown causes. And then at the end of December, that's when they first identified this is a new virus, which we have never encountered before. And since then, we've noticed that the numbers are climbing up. And we also noticed things are becoming worse and worse in China and in Wuhan, where we heard stories where hospital outpatient centers are just packed with patients who have fevers and coughs, and the hospital system are under extreme pressure at that time.
Your parents live in Wuhan, is that correct?
Right, yes.
What were they telling you?
So at the beginning, honestly, we were not super concerned, because I think at the beginning, the general public are not getting enough information, or they are getting misinformed. Because at the beginning, the government were telling us that the situation was in total control, and also there is no evidence of human-to-human transmission. And that's a misinformation to the general public. And at that time, we thought, oh, we live very far away from the seafood market where the first few cases were identified. So we really thought it was just a local outbreak, which can be easily contained, and we won't by no means at any risk for that.
So people were getting on with their lives. At what point did this change for you, for your parents?
Things changed January 14th, already about a month and a half after the first outbreak of the disease. We heard the expert on the TV says there is for sure human-to-human transmission. And we also learned stories from around us that the hospitals were packed. People started to panic. And on January 23rd, that's when the government closed off Wuhan by canceling planes and trains leaving the city, suspended all public and private transportation within it. And Wuhan has been in lockdown mode for the past 45 days since then.
I know we talked at this time, your parents were about to visit you. They were about to board a plane to visit you to meet your new son. Congratulations on your firstborn child.
Yes. And at that time, yes, my parents were initially planning to come to the United States to celebrate the Chinese New Year with us. But then because the situation was getting really badly, they decided to cancel their trip. And the day after they canceled their trip, the city was in lockdown mode.
So after it was in lockdown mode, what does that mean? I've never been in a city in lockdown mode. What is lockdown mode?
The lockdown is really a full lockdown. It means no public or private transportation at all. There's no buses, no trains, no subway stations. You cannot even drive your own car on the road. The schools are closed, and most companies have not resumed business as of yet. I can give you a specific example. In my building, we live in a 30-story high apartment building. They even closed down the elevators to prevent people from going out.
That is a long walk. 30 stories is not easy to walk up.
Yeah, you're not supposed to go down or anything. How people are continuing their lives right now is that they do group purchase to get groceries. Everything is done through the community, where the community is taking up a lot of responsibility these days, such as organizing group purchases for groceries, arranging transportation for urgent needs, checking out people who live alone. The responsibility also includes managing the suspected cases and sending them for isolation.
And then what happened right after your parents decided that they were going to cancel their trip, and their trip would have been canceled anyway because of the lockdown? What happened to them? They're in the 30-story building that they can no longer use the elevator.
What happened in my family is that on the day of the lockdown, actually, my mom started to show symptoms. And that was extremely worrying at that time, as you can imagine. At first, my mom had mild fevers. She was just taking Tylenol, and my dad was just doing some home care for her because at that time, they didn't want to go to the hospital as they are worrying about the cross-infection at the hospital. But then her condition kept deteriorating pretty quickly. She became weak. She had high fevers, which did not seem to be able to control by common cold medications, and she had difficulty in breathing. So my dad had to take her into one of the hospitals. They did CT scan and they did blood tests on her. The CT image showed a very classic phenotype of lung damages from coronavirus, and that's how we knew that she got infected.
And then when you were sitting there in the United States, can't go back with a PhD in cell biology, what are you thinking?
At the beginning, I was terrified. I was really, really terrified. I felt very, very helpless at that time because there is really nothing much I can do here to help them. But after the initial panic, I decided to read up as much as possible about the disease. I also reached out to almost all my contacts back home and to see if there's any avenue that I can try to help them. And that includes reaching out to the local volunteer groups to see if they can send anybody to my home to help my parents. And that also includes, like, can I go ask around and to get my mom get tested sooner so she might be able to get a hospital bed sooner? Because at that time, one limiting factor or one bottleneck is that there were not enough testing kits in Wuhan. So my mom could not get formally confirmed for a few days, which means that she could not get hospitalized. So I tried all my avenue to reach out to people and see if there's any chance they can escalate a case where it can get my mom tested and get my mom hospitalized.
So at this point, your mom is going to the hospital. Now your father's taking her. If the city's locked down, how does he get there?
my mom's case at that time was considered as an emergency case. So at that time, my dad can still take her to the hospital. They had to leave very, very early in the morning to avoid the peak hours in the hospital. So they left home around 4 o'clock in the morning every day to go and get infusions. But even going out at 4 a.m., the hospital outpatient centers were packed. And according to my dad, there are hundreds of patients, just like my mom, in the infusion room getting infusions. They could not get tested, and most of them are cases of coronavirus.
How long did that go on, where she's going to the hospital, still not getting tested, still not getting admitted, but getting some kind of infusions, I guess, to keep her stable?
Right. The infusion was just to treat the symptoms. It lasted for about 4 days for us before she finally got tested. That 4 days, I would say, is the most difficult time for me and my family because of how chaotic it is in the hospital, how many patients were there, and it is extremely dangerous environment, and it is extremely stressful for my parents, for my family to be there.
Yeah, your father's going there, and he is at risk of catching it while he's there with sick people.
Exactly, yes. As we were worrying about my mom, we were also extremely worried about my dad because he could get infected just by bringing her to the hospital like that every single day.
And you, with a PhD in cell biology, know so much and can look up what's happening, but aren't able to do much of much despite all the knowledge.
Yeah, that definitely makes me feel very, very helpless. At that time, I was mostly calling around, asking my friends for information, asking my friends if they have any ways to help out a little bit here and there. And I was very lucky that I actually have some very good friends in Wuhan who were able to help us. For example, I have a friend who gave us some of the sanitizing agents and disinfectant agents, and he sent it to our home. And I have a friend help order grocery and stuff for my family. All these are little things, but they are extremely helpful in a situation like that. This is almost like life-saving in a situation like that.
4 days of going to the hospital, getting infusions, she's finally diagnosed. What happens then?
We are one of the lucky cases where after 4 days of going to infusions, we actually got a call at one of the nights, and they say there was a hospital bed available for my mom. At that time, they would basically give us a call and say, there's a bed. You have to send the patient in within an hour. Otherwise, the bed is gone because it is in such high demand for a hospital bed at that time. So my dad had to rush her out and send her in that same night. And since then, she's been hospitalized for almost 5 weeks. And my mom is still in hospital.
Wow. So she's still there now, 5 weeks later.
Correct.
And then you said you had other relatives, your whole family is in the area. Were any of them affected or only your mother?
Yeah, I do have another 3 families got infected. Each one has slightly different story, but as of now, they all get hospitalized. I have a cousin whose situation is mild. So she was sent to one of the makeshift hospitals. So these are hospitals that are transformed from our local stadium or gym or conference convention. And she's getting treated there. My aunt and uncle are getting treated in hospitals. And it also took them about a week before they can get a formal diagnosis and get hospital beds.
Wow. Okay. So 6 weeks. What does it look like for your mother? She's been 6 weeks now in the hospital with diagnosed infection in a hospital bed. How is she doing?
I would say things became much better since she got hospitalized. At least she has access to some proper care, and she has access to oxygen supplement, which is something she needed for a very long time because of the shortness of breath. And her condition seems to be getting better recently. As of yesterday, she actually got tested for the first time after she got admitted for the coronavirus, and her results is negative. So this is great, great news for us. But it doesn't mean that she will get discharged, because recently we've noticed that there is actually a very high false negative rate of the nuclear assay. So what the hospital are doing right now, at least in Wuhan, is that they're taking a very conservative approach. So all patients have to be tested at least 2 to 3 times. before they can be discharged. And even after discharge, all patients will be sent to an isolation center for another 14 days of quarantine before they can be released to home. We are really hopeful that she's on her way towards a full recovery, and we do look forward to having her come back home one day.
Well, that's great news. And of course, we hope for the best for her and your family.
Thank you.
Based on the experience of your family, what do you think people in the United States and in Europe should know? Wuhan is a modern city. This is not the far west of China. It's not Mongolia. It's not places that don't look modern. It's a modern city and a huge one. What are you thinking now about the United States? We're now a couple of hundred diagnosed cases in, and you were talking about the time between when things changed very rapidly of being about a month from the first diagnosis of any cases in Wuhan. What are you thinking now about the United States? I guess we'll know more when this podcast comes out, but what's your thought?
I have my worries, but also I have my reasons of optimism. I think my worries right now mainly come from a few aspects. I think, first of all, I worry that there's not enough testing capacity for the new coronavirus. Because the key to contain the disease, the key to even control the disease, is to get people tested early and to be able to identify those cases, to isolate them, and to track who they have been in close contact with. What I've heard is that there's not enough testing capacity to test people here in the States. Only recently, the FDA gave green light for high-tech labs to run their own tests. And that really means that more people will get tested. And that could also mean that there will be a significant increase in the number of new cases in this or next week. That's number one. And I think also I worry that the healthcare system does not have the surge capacity. Right now, we're in the regular flu season where hospitals are already running at near full capacity. Adding a high volume of patients with this contagious respiratory infection will drain most institutions. And that's what we saw what happened in China. And that's what makes people panic and make people feel helpless. That could also mean that it will block other important health hospital activities because patients who are on regular dialysis, they are on chemotherapy, they couldn't get access to their regular care. Those are heartbreaking stories. And I think we shouldn't forget about those people. And generally here in the United States, I see almost two camps of people. I see the Chinese or the Asian communities, they're definitely more worried. They're definitely more vigilant about the situation. While a lot of the Americans, I feel they're not fully aware of how bad the situation is or how bad the situation could get. I worry that they're not mentally or materially prepared. Because the problem is if one day the public wake up and they see the numbers and they will start to freak out, then that's when things can get out of control. And I think lastly, I do see some wider impact of this virus. I see xenophobia cases or racism against people of Chinese and people of East Asian descendants, and also the spread of misinformation and conspiracy theories about the virus online. So all these are pretty worrisome to me.
Well, I wish the best to you. We all wish the best to you, your family, your extended family, your parents, your mother, to get well and hopefully be discharged soon. Thank you so much for joining us on the Syneos Health Podcast.
Yeah, thank you.
That's all for today's episode of the Syneos Health Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Stewart from Syneos Health Consulting. If you want to talk through a hard decision you're making at your life sciences company, you may email me at podcast@syneoshealth.com. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. For access to more future-focused, actionable life sciences insights, visit the Syneos Health Insights Hub at insightshub.health. Syneos Health, shortening the distance from lab to life.